This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go? And tonight's show is a little different from some of the other ones I've had on. Anyone who listens to this show regularly knows I kind of lean away from the extraterrestrial hypothesis when it comes to UFOs. But that doesn't mean I completely discount it. And one of the subjects we've never really dealt with on this show, other than in passing, is that of hybrids. So tonight, I have the co-author of a book called Meet the Hybrids. His name is Miguel Mendoza. And one of the hybrids, or one of the women who believes she is a hybrid, Charmaine. I found this interview very interesting, and I don't feel like, as again, anyone who listens to this show realizes I don't feel like I ever have the right to doubt someone's story. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened to them. So, barring some obvious level of deception, which I don't think there is here, I tend to believe the stories at face value. Now, the interpretation of the stories can be taken a lot of different ways. So, it's not so much, did this happen to them, but what was it really? Maybe it is extraterrestrials. Maybe I'm overthinking it. I don't know. But I found this interview interesting. This was conducted a couple of nights ago, and I feel that one way or another, there's something to this. What it is, I don't know. Perhaps it is extraterrestrials. They certainly seem to feel that it is, and they're the ones having the experiences. Maybe it's something entirely different, as we've suggested many times on the show, wearing different masks for different occasions. I don't know. All I know is it's a mystery, and yeah, here we go. And Miguel, you're the co-author of the book, correct?
Correct, yes.
And you are one of the people that they talk to in the book, Charmaine?
Yes, yeah, I'm one of the hybrids.
Okay, all right. And who is the other co-author?
Barbara Lamb, who is a therapist of many stripes, particularly over the last quarter century. She has begun to work with people in hypnotherapy and regression therapy, past life regression therapy, who started to come to her with experiences with extraterrestrials. And some of these experiences included past lives as extraterrestrials. So she began to dig into this increasingly over the years, and then was at, I believe, may have been the UFO Congress some years ago, and met a woman there who she just found particularly striking looking, and this lady said, you know, what is it, what are you looking at? And she said, well, you know, I hope you won't mind me saying, but you remind me of a hybrid. And that woman was Cynthia Crawford, who is one of the hybrids we talked to in the book, who responded, yes, I am a hybrid. And they began talking and became firm friends. And down the line, Barbara had begun to meet other hybrids to research the subject through the stories that were coming to her through her clients of being abducted, having all kinds of contact experiences, including experiences where they were being taken up onto ships and were having sperm and eggs removed. And then some of these people would later find themselves back on the ships at night and be presented with babies who were half ET, half human looking. And they would be, particularly the mothers, would be encouraged to hold them, to give them energy, to create physical connections with them. And Barbara then began to present this material at conferences. I had had a lifetime of interest in this subject. I had been writing a novel about truth in our time and the need for truth at all levels to be spoken in our time. And I started to dig into the Black Projects for background research on a particular character to look at the truth in that subject, because I'd had my own sightings and contact experiences. And so during that period, I came across Barbara's work, Barbara's lectures on hybrids. And so I end up getting hooked on this subject, very, very interested, very stimulated by it, and felt a very strong emotional connection to the subject for reasons I'm still unclear on. And so I started to write a novel incorporating hybrids, and I wanted to talk to Barbara about this because I wanted to get even more detail and insight if I could. And from there, we began to connect, to talk, and she told me that there was a group of hybrids working with a group of experiencers and other quote-unquote regular people who wanted to help to bring this awareness out to the rest of humanity. And I was particularly stimulated by this as I, you know, a former environmental campaigner. So automatically it sort of put me into this kind of strategic headspace, and I started to analyze the idea of hybrids bringing their information out into the world and looking at how best to do that. And I concluded that one of the most important things to do was to kick off with an evidence base, collect their testimony, their stories, their experiences, their understandings, and give them control over the process, in that they get to speak their truth without being in any way sort of set upon, if you like, by the kind of cynical mindset that would just, you know, want to rubbish their experiences. So I suggested to Barbara, well, let's, you know, pull a book together in which these guys are able to speak their truth. And then from there, you know, there is a series of steps that I anticipate will happen. And one of those has already come to pass, being the co-presentation between Barbara and six of the hybrids at this year's International UFO Congress, of which Charmaine was a part.
Okay, and how was that received?
Really, really well, yes. I was, you know, a little bit apprehensive because obviously it's the subject is not something that normally gets discussed, you know, even at UFO conferences. So it was really, really good to go along and for each of us to have a little bit of time to just speak about us personally and how we feel that we're doing our missions here on Earth. And it was just great to have people come up to us afterwards and, you know, say thank you very much for sharing your information. And, you know, we can sort of sympathize. Some people had similar experiences, so it gave them the opportunity to realize, you know, that they're not the only ones out there going through certain things. and everyone was very, very positive. So it was a fantastic experience, and I'd never been to America before, so it was very nice for me to visit and get to know the American people and travel around a little bit. And yeah, it was a fantastic experience.
Okay, and I guess let's start with this. When you say you're a hybrid, what does that mean to you?
Well, for me, I'm a reptilian hybrid, so I'm partly human, partly reptilian. And the reptilians have had a lot of bad press over the time, particularly with people like, you know, David Icke and so forth. So, you know, for me, there was slightly a little bit of that at the conference, that, you know, we understood that all hybrids are bad and evil, but you look okay. And that, you know, for me, that's part of my mission, is to get people to understand that, you know, hybrids are very nice people, and we all have our missions, and we're here to help humanity. And particularly with the reptilians, not all reptilians are bad. You know, we're not all out to take over the world. I'm certainly not. I'm here to help humanity, not to hinder it. So it was interesting that by giving people the opportunity to meet me and actually, you know, spend some time with me and ask me questions, that whereas their opinion had been quite negative against reptilians, that, you know, giving them that the opportunity to just spend some time and speak to me, their mind changed for the better. So that was nice, because that's part of the reason why I'm here.
Okay. At what point in your life did you start considering yourself a hybrid?
Well, I suppose it was younger in life. When I was a teenager, I'd done partial changes, and what I mean by that is, you know, my eyes changing or my skin texture changing. I'd always had experiences, i.e. I'd always been visited by ET species. You know, when I was a child, I just thought that was a normal thing. I didn't realize that it didn't happen to everyone. As I got older, obviously, I realized that, you know, not everyone had these sorts of visitors. So I was a little select with who I discussed it with. Not, you know, it's not your usual thing that you go to school and say, oh, by the way, last night.
Right.
So when I sort of got to early adulthood, I have a team of reptilian ETs that work with me, and I always communicate with them via telepathy. And I'd had suspicions, you know, mostly due to the partial changes, that I was a hybrid. And I'd asked them, you know, can you confirm this in some way? You know, I would just rather know, am I or am I not? And I had an experience where they abducted me and took me off, and, you know, very, very nice experience. I feel very comfortable when I'm with them. There's, you know, there's no fear or jeopardy there. And I was taken to a cave, and the reptilian said, you know, okay, you've asked us this question. You would like confirmation as to whether you're a hybrid or not. And so they gathered around me in a circle and put their hands on me, and they assisted in me changing into my reptilian form. So for me, that was confirmation enough that, yes, my suspicions were correct, and that I was a hybrid.
Okay. How much of this stuff did you remember prior to being regressed hypnotically?
That particular experience, I remembered very clearly, and I remembered being in my reptilian form for approximately 5 hours, and communicating with them and walking around in that form and just sort of getting familiar with that form. So I had a complete recognition of that event. Some of the other events to do with the military was more what was uncovered during the regressions with Barbara and Mary Rodwell.
Okay, all right. I'm sure a lot of people are going to listen to you talking about this and just think you're absolutely nuts.
Oh, of course, yes, yes, I'm prepared for that, yes.
what makes you think that they're extraterrestrial and not just maybe appearing that way?
Okay, well, I mean, for me, I've had a lot of experiences, as I say, you know, ever since a child, with various ET species, you know, also military and secret society, but perhaps we'll get into that later. Yes, I understand, you know, some people will think, well, you know, how can you absolutely certainly say that it is whichever ET race, you know, greys or reptilians or whoever? I mean, for me, having had so much experience and visitations and abductions with these species, for me, there's absolutely no doubt. And you have a sense. Everyone has that, what some term as sixth sense, that you know if something happens, you know if it's right or if it's wrong or if there's any fear factor. And for me, there's absolutely no doubt that the ET species that have and do visit me are just that. They are ET species visiting me. With the military, when I'm visited by them, it's a completely different feeling. And you're treated in a completely different sense. And the same with the secret society.
Okay. Well, I guess what I mean is that, you know, we have cases of hybrids and changelings and stuff going back through history, prior to the UFO, let's say the UFO idea, mm-hmm. back when it was fairies and things like that. And, I mean, from my experiences and from what I see, I don't see much evidence of an extraterrestrial as much as an alien intelligence that's not maybe appearing to us as what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm wondering how, other than just what they seem like, what else convinces you they're extraterrestrial rather than, say, interdimensional or something else entirely?
Mm. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, for me, I pick up very much on energies. So, you know, for example, each species, when they come and visit you, they have a very different energy to each other. And it's a very different energy to, let's say, a human energy or an animal energy. So for me, over the years, I've come to know and recognize them instinctively. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, yes, they are ET in origin. Because of being very familiar with their energetic signature, if you like.
Okay, all right. How would you, and either of you can answer this one, what would be the difference between, say, a hybrid and, like, what Jenny Randall's called star children or what people call indigo children and so on?
Do you want to go first on that one, Miguel?
Well, this is a question that I am increasingly concerned with. In the research for the new book that I'm doing, I am, and just because of my own journey, I'm really starting to wonder about this, because when I first began this project, you know, the idea was to come in as a virtually invisible, respectful social scientist, and I came out of it wondering, you know, what my true nature might be. And that's a hell of a journey. And I'm now wondering how I can best pull together research which explores the question of what all humans are. Because I'm very concerned with this issue of awakening, of activation, because I feel like that's what I've gone through. And is that because I'm an ET soul? I had this particular experience with one of the hybrids recently, Juju, who has been central to this awakening. Every time I speak with her, we have a sort of weekly date where we get together on Skype and hang out and talk and explore things. And every time there's this crazy revelation, which kind of peels back another layer of all of this. And I said to her, you know, with all of the experience that I've had, the things that have happened to me, the sort of the energetic reaction I have when I'm around anybody with kind of ET energy, it really sends my energy through the roof. It really has a very strong effect on me, because I don't have any stimulants of any kind anymore. I don't have caffeine. I try and avoid sugar. So I'm very aware of when my energetic state changes. And throughout the research, throughout the book, you will find references over and over again to Hybrid's been here to shift the frequencies, to raise the frequencies, raise the energetic vibration of this planet towards ascension, and to trigger awakenings. And I realized in one moment of epiphany, talking to Juju, as I was reporting to her this energetic response, this awakening to my own potential nature, I suddenly realized, oh my God, I'm the embodiment of the mission. And that's a heavy thought. That is weird when what you're trying to do is keep your feet on the ground so that you can talk just as easily and comfortably with a skeptic as a believer, you know, if you want to divide people that way. And it gets harder. It gets harder every day, because as these things start to trigger in me, as these things start to develop, I guess my understanding of where the hybrids are coming from has increased, and my appreciation for what they've been saying and setting out is developing from the inside. And as that happens, you know, I mentioned this to Juju, and I said, well, do you know anyone who you think might be psychic enough to pick up on what my nature might be? Is there some answer that I can get to this, some clarity? And she said, well, if you ask 10 different psychics, you'll get 10 different interpretations. So the best thing to do is to ask yourself, go inside for that information, because you already know. You've just got to allow it. You've got to explore that for yourself. And she said another way, you know, if you want to ask, your guides can assist with that. So you can ask them, as you're falling asleep at night, could you give me a word or an image that I can remember that will help me to understand who and what I am? So in my response to that, I started to explain how I'd always felt on this planet among humans, how I had thought about, related to the idea of ETs, etc. And then this very strange thing happened. I felt my body kind of almost slump, kind of almost slumped to the side, as if something had been switched off. And it was as if somebody was using my mouth as a loudspeaker. And out of it came this very clear line, I have the soul of a wanderer. And it came with like this clap of thunder in my solar plexus. And I have only had that response when in the presence of a major truth. So that forced me to explore this idea of wanderers. I looked up some books on the subject. I started to read Carla Ruckert's book, Wanderer's Handbook. And in that, at the beginning, there's a questionnaire scored out of 100, in which anything above 75, in her view, you have an ET soul. And I scored 85. And that was, I guess, one of those moments. I mean, I always take these things with a pinch of salt, because I'm never 100% sure of anything in particular. But I remain open. And so in the ensuing period, as I've started the interviews for the new book, I've been asking this question: are we all starseeds? Are we all hybrids? Are we all star beings? Or are some people just absolutely regular humans? I mean, I think all of this goes into what is our true history. And that, you know, is a gigantic 48-hour nonstop conversation all of its own.
All right. Charmaine, do you remember the question?
Yes, yeah. I mean, okay. I would sympathize very much with Miguel there, that, you know, really, who knows how much of humanity are actually, you know, partial ET genetics, you know, and then if, you know, if you're sort of open to that prospect of some or all of humanity having partial ET genetics, then you, you know, you've got the whole factor of, well, there's very many ET, you know, species. So, you know, people could be part human, part one ET, or three parts ET and one part human genetics. So I mean, just thinking about that is sort of, you know, quite mind-boggling. I realise, you know, for some people that would be quite a leap, especially if the whole hybrid subject, an ET subject in itself, is something that someone is not very receptive to or doesn't know very much about, to then start to consider that a great portion of humanity, or all of humanity, is partially ET genetics, then that's sort of quite a mind bender, isn't it?
Okay. Is there anything that you've ever had done that, like DNA analysis or anything like that, that you can show people that says, okay, this is unusual in some way?
No, I haven't as yet. I mean, in a previous interview that did come up, and as I said on that occasion, I am open to the prospect of doing that. If anyone has any specific details on places that might do that, yes, absolutely, I would be open to the prospect of doing some sort of DNA testing or other types of testing. I know some people have suggested bone density testing. I'm not quite sure where they're going with that, but yeah, absolutely, yes. I am open to that, but I haven't done that as yet.
Have you ever been able to get a picture of you transforming in any way, even in minor ways?
No, I haven't. I mean, when I've done partial change, it's a very curious thing, because sometimes you'll do a partial change, especially when I was a child. And to a certain extent, you wouldn't notice that you've done a change, which I realise for some people might sound rather odd. But when you're just changing into another form that isn't still naturally your own, as well as obviously your human form is naturally in your own, you don't really think anything of it. It's not abnormal to you. It's abnormal to the people around you or the people who witness it. But to yourself, it's not abnormal, it's just natural. So when I was a child, I wasn't always aware of, you know, for example, my eyes changing. It's just something that happened, and because it felt very natural and normal, I didn't consider it an odd thing. So no, I haven't taken any pictures as yet.
Okay, all right. A lot of people, I mean, if they hear the term hybrid, they're probably, if they've been researching this stuff for long enough or reading about this long enough, we'll go back to Bud Hopkins and Intruders. And before that, really, the only mention of it, you know, it goes back to fairy lore and such, with changelings and things like that. But in those stories, they were always, the hybrids were always on the ships. They weren't here. So trying to think of how to phrase this question. What is your origin, and is it different from what people were experiencing when they see children on a ship or during an abduction?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, you know, I was born and created here on Earth. But yes, you know, for some other hybrids, i.e., you know, if people have had hybrid children, then, you know, a situation of visiting them either on ship, so that those hybrid children do not come to Earth. I have my own set of hybrid children, which are not with me. They're at various other places. Three of them are on a military base. So, yes, for some people, their hybrid children, they will just visit them on board a ship, rather than have them with them, or some people indeed don't get to visit them at all. They're aware of having hybrid children, to refer back to what Miguel was talking about earlier, with some cases of people having their eggs taken or their sperm taken, mm-hmm. and then the hybrid children are created. And sometimes those people do get access to the children and are encouraged to have a relationship of sorts with them, and nurture them and spend time with them. and other people do not get that chance. Sometimes they never get to meet their children or have any interaction with them.
Okay. Did your mother ever have any weird experiences?
She has, yes. I'm hoping Barbara Lamb is coming over to the UK this summer. So I've been encouraging my mother to have a regression session with her to perhaps, get to the basis of possibly what might have happened while she was pregnant with me. Because, yes, there have been some odd circumstances that have happened. My mother actually had been told prior to finding out that she was pregnant with me. She was told that, you know, she was not allowed to, you know, not able to have any more children. So from her mind, she had two children at the time anyway, and was told that she couldn't have any more children. And so in her mind, that was that. And then, you know, some miraculous thing happened and she found out she was pregnant with me. Now, you know, okay, that there could be a simple explanation to that, or perhaps there's another explanation. She could have been abducted at some point but doesn't have recollection of it, and at that point perhaps, you know, I was put into her womb and hey presto, she become pregnant. So but yeah, certainly something we would both like to, you know, to look into more, and hopefully Barbara will have some time for a regression and possibly we might find out a little bit more about that.
Okay, all right. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Miguel and Charmaine.
Where Did the Road Go can be heard first and usually live on WVBR, Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern. Go to wheredidtheroadgo.com to ask questions of our live guests through the chat room. Where Did the Road Go is then re-aired on Dark Matter Radio and Deprogrammed Radio. You can download all shows for free on the website, and you can subscribe to us on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, or Vimeo. Additional content can be found on our video channels. You will also find our upcoming schedule, book reviews, blogs, free book downloads, links, and more. We are also on Facebook and Twitter, and if you want to help support the show, there are links to donate to us. Everything you need can be found at wheredidtheroadgo.com.
All right, and we're talking with Miguel Mendoza. Mendoza. Oh, I keep leaving that N out. I am really sorry. And Charmaine, I'm not even going to try and pronounce your last name. And the new book here is Meet the Hybrids, The Lives and Missions of ET Ambassadors on Earth. You've mentioned the military a bunch of times. What role do you think they have in your life in this whole hybrid scenario?
Well, I mean, as I've said previously, I've been having experiences and visitations since a child, you know, since I can remember. And they were always very positive experiences. And when I got to being a teenager, the experiences I was having started to become slightly negative. And as I sort of got into my later teenage years, I then started having visitations from the military. Now, to begin with, I didn't have a full understanding as to why this was happening. I was having a lot of missing time. I could remember partial things about the experiences, but not everything. And as time went by, I managed to sort of work out a bit more of what was happening. I had some regression sessions, first of all, with Mary Rodwell and then with Barbara Lamb. And what appeared to be happening is, so far as the military is concerned, I was actually part of their, or am part of their, breeding program. So I have three hybrid children that I'm aware of. These three are on a UK military base somewhere. Very limited contact. On occasions, I am allowed to go and visit them, but it's very much you're observed. I'm never allowed to be alone with the children. I do remember one occasion. I was pregnant at the time, and I was taken to the military base. I remember waking up in the military base, being in a very sparse room. There was a nurse there, and I was just asking her, you know, where am I and what's going on? And she said, I can't tell you. I'm not allowed to tell you. So I kept persisting because obviously I was wanting to know where I was and you know why I'd been taken to this place. And And I guessed it was a military situation because previous experiences I had, it was a similar looking room, you know, very sparsely furnished. And she said that, you know, you've been brought here. All I can tell you is you've been brought here. Something's going to be taken from you. Now, because I'd had suspicions about being pregnant anyway, you know, immediately I thought, OK, they're going to take the child. I remember someone else coming into the room with one of those sort of medical smocks on and a mask. And I remember being drugged. So I briefly sort of blacked out at that point. And then I remember waking up and the doctor was still there at that point, and he had something in his arms and he turned quickly and left the room. So in my mind, it was very clear that, yes, I had been pregnant and they had taken that child. So the military influence has been happening for some years now, you know, and being part of the breeding program that I'm aware of, I have three children, but it's quite possible I have more than that. But I've been made to not remember, you know, those circumstances.
And how much of that were you able to remember without hypnosis? Any of it?
Yes. Yeah, I could recall some of it. And then after the hypnotherapy session, I was able to sort of access a bit more memory of actually being with the children. So for example, I remembered being taken into the room where the children are kept. The children have never been allowed to leave the base. And again, they're continuously monitored. And it's very much a situation where they're in training. So the children will be used in the future for military purposes, you know, to go on missions and things like that. Because of their abilities as hybrid children, they're very useful to the military.
Okay. I'll hit you with this one first, Miguel. What are you taking away from this that the mission of the hybrids is? Why are there hybrids?
I guess that depends on whether we're talking about them being the product of service to self ETs or service to others ETs. In that, the work of David Jacobs, I think, principally analyzes the activity of the service to self ETs, those that are here for their purposes. They have, you know, no real interest in our well-being. It's about them and their needs. Whereas our research and that of Dr. Christiane Queiroz, who did a study very similar to ours, although somewhat narrower. She did that 16 years before us, and I became aware of that about a month into the research for the book. And her conclusions were almost identical to ours. Her findings, the type of people that she connected with, she interviewed six North American women, and their take on things, their understanding, their stories were almost identical to what we found from eight different people 16 years later. And that is the way it seems to break down. Now, the service to others ETs, I think of as kind of cosmic missionaries that have already gone through their own ascension process, their spiritual evolution, and are here to assist humans in going through their own. But this place seems somewhat contested, and how all of those ETs relate to one another, I don't know. That's not something we got into in the research, but I think that's broadly what's going on. So these kind of missionaries are here creating hybrids, which are a kind of stepping stone, a bridge to the ETs themselves. So they can mediate, they can go between. And as I said, this business of awakening, of raising vibration, I've actually experienced it, and that I never saw coming. Even though I realized that, you know, when I got into the implications of what's going on here, because I had no idea, I'd never heard of ascension, I'd heard of it, but I'd never paid any attention to it previously. But the hybrids all talk about love, unity, connection, oneness. It presents as an entirely benevolent enterprise. And the hybrids themselves are, I'm still slightly surprised, slightly taken aback by the consistency in their words, their deeds, their spirit. I watched the DVD yesterday of the lecture at the UFO Congress when the hybrids gave brief presentations at the end of Barbara's lecture. And it is extraordinary to listen to these people. The messages that they have, the spirit they have, the bravery that they have, given the fact that our culture still hasn't been able to handle the fact that humans come in different varieties. I mean, the levels of, I mean, look at the whole Black Lives Matter thing was unfolding during the research for this book. And you're talking to people who are saying we're part extraterrestrial, not part of something not even of this world. And then you turn on the TV and black people are getting shot dead every day by the cops, it seems. And you look at almost any kind of inter-community relationship. You look at the way the Middle East is ripping itself apart and you think, oh my God, A, this place is not remotely ready for this, but B, it is absolutely crying out for it.
Okay. Charmaine, you can address this either from your viewpoint or an overall viewpoint, however you want.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I completely agree and resonate with what Miguel just said, that in some respects, humanity is not ready for this, but in some respects, it's crying out for it. And, you know, the thing is yes, there's always going to be people out there that are going to ridicule or doubt or disbelieve or say that all us hybrids are mad, we must be. And the thing is, you know, when you're in this position of being honest about yourself and who and what you are and trying to help people, to a certain extent, you will always experience ridicule. But for me personally, I know I'm here to help people. And so I have to just accept that there's going to be negative as well as positive. And for me, you know, for every 100 people you have saying, okay, you're mad or I don't believe you or whatever else, or all reptilians are bad, you know, whatever their standpoint is, for every 100 people saying that, there may be one or two or three people that you help. And it's those people that need your help is why I'm here and why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I've kind of gone public, if you like, because it gives the people who are having experiences. I run my own support groups in the UK for people who are having abduction or encounters or people who do suspect that they are hybrids. And also people who are having sort of negative experiences with military and secret societies, you know. And for me, it's very rewarding because you're getting people who are coming along and you can actually turn around to them and say, I can sympathize. I can understand, you know, your fear and what you're going through because I've gone through it myself. And, you know, if you can come at it from that point of view and people realize that, you know, okay, you're not just someone there listening or not just someone there, you know, sort of playing the counselling role. You can actually say, I've gone through it as well. And, you know, people start to realize, okay, I'm not mad. There are other people who are going through this. And, you know, for me, it's very rewarding. So for all the people you have that are negative, for me, the most important thing is to get out there and help people.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to remember everything you said in the chapter. You have some abilities, do you not?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes, all us hybrids do. So, I mean, for me, I've always been into healing. So I do healing work and I run healing courses. The counselling and regression I'm studying at the moment, so I'll be qualified soon. I'm also a nutrition therapist and I do emotional freedom technique as well, which is very, very useful for people, again, who are having experiences. And that fear factor, I notice particularly people going to sleep, they get into a wrong cycle of obviously they're afraid of things happening. So they'll end up not wanting to sleep at night. So that's very good for dealing with the fear. Also, abilities such as being able to read people's minds. Now, that's not for people to panic. It's not something I do all the time because I'm very respectful of people and I wouldn't intentionally go into someone's mind if they wouldn't want me to. Going back to the healing, a lot of people have found my voice to be very healing. So some of the clients I've got, if they've got problems sleeping, I've recorded my voice. I'm doing my own meditation and relaxation series because people have said that that's sort of quite healing to them. So I'm going to be doing that. Also, being able to see people's health issues, see into their body or see into their auras, which aids me when I do my healing work, which is quite good.
Okay. Now, you also mentioned secret societies. You want to get into that briefly?
Yes, of course. Okay, so the secret society, I had an experience where I was abducted from my home. And I don't have any recollection of the journey to wherever this place was. I do remember waking up in the room and this gentleman was there, black robe with the black hood. So I couldn't see very much of his face. And he explained that he was from a secret society and he was inviting me to join. At which point I started asking various questions such as, well, who are you and what do you do and what type of role are you expecting me to do in the secret society? He very much did not want to answer any of my questions, but was very adamant on wanting me to join. When I sort of didn't turn around and say yes and continued asking him questions, he became very aggressive. And I said, well, no, I have no intention of joining your society. At which point, again, he was very angry and left the room. He went out into a bigger room, which was sort of a half moon shape. On one side, you had tall windows and a sort of a platform that was raised. There was four high-backed wooden chairs. He went to sit on one of them, and there was three other gentlemen that were sitting on the other chairs. And what became very apparent is that there was other people in the room. Something was about to happen. Some sort of meeting was taking place. And I thought, well, this is very odd. Why am I being allowed to be present for a meeting? A being was brought into the room. I've not had connections with this particular ET race, so I don't have a specific name for what they're called. Their skin is sort of a black and red in colour. Their eyes are yellow and red. He was brought in to speak to these four gentlemen that were sitting on the raised platform. And he was asked to join the society, to which he agreed. And he was taken out of the room. And most of the people were leaving by two doors. And at this point, a reptilian being walked into one of the doors, through one of the doors. And instinctively, I recognized this reptilian as being my son. And so we had communication. We went into one of the rooms off of this main room, was just talking. I hadn't had much contact with my son up to this point, so from my point of view, I was really quite pleased. Although in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, this seems a bit of a setup situation, because obviously I've been brought here against my will. I've just been asked to join the society, to which I've refused. I've been allowed to witness this, what would be a secret meeting. I'm being allowed to be aware and remember this. I didn't know if I would remember all of it when I was sort of taken back home. And then my son shows up. So it seemed a very instigated situation. But I thought, well, I'm happy to see my son, so I'll go with it for the time being. Later on, I was taken into another room, which was circular. And again, was presented to these men in the black robes with the hoods up. I very much had an uneasy feeling at this point, because they were all standing in a circle holding candles. And it was, you know, visually, it was very much ritualistic. So at that point, I was somewhat concerned, thinking, okay, what's going to happen now? The black and red being that I'd seen earlier on was brought into the room. And we were both brought forward towards the gentleman who had spoken to me previous to that, you know, and approached me and said, you know, we want you to join the society. And I'd had a very strong sense of the reason why they wanted me to join the society was for breeding purposes. So again, as the military have me as part of their breeding program, it seemed that the secret society wanted me as part of their breeding program. So what took place then was basically a ritualistic rape. So the black and red being was ordered to rape me, which then took place. And the purpose for that was creating a child. So it seems that, you know, regardless, I had previously said, no, I have no intention of being part of your society. They had chosen to ignore that, and you know, they wanted a child, and so that's it, they were going to have one. So after that was over with, I was taken into a room, and, you know, obviously I could clean up and everything, and I saw my son again, and then was drugged, and the next thing I remember was waking up at home. To my knowledge, I've had no further dealings with that secret society, so whether it's a case of they've got what they wanted, i.e. a child, and that's it. They're, you know, they're not interested in anything else, or perhaps other things are going on, but I'm not being allowed to remember.
Now, do you remember that at all spontaneously, or was that through hypnosis?
I do remember some of that scenario, yes. And when I had a regression with Mary Rodwell, the last regression I had with her, I remembered going into the room and the start of the ritual, but I didn't remember all of it. And then after I'd had the regression with Mary, I could then recollect the full ritualistic rape scenario. So, you know, from my point of view, obviously you're very angry afterwards, because you're being taken against your will, and you're being sure used in a way that obviously you would not like to be used. The child that was created, as far as I'm aware, I've had no contact with that child. So, you know, so again, I mean, that's a whole other subject matter, that, you know, children are being created, you know, not just with me, with other people as well, that children are being created, and that you have no access to them. You have no idea of where they're being kept or how they're being used. You know, so far as the children on the military base, obviously they are going to be used for missions. And obviously it's a difficult thing, because how do you get to them? And even if you knew where the children were and you actually went there, you know, you're one person on your own that's trying to instigate something or get them out, which, you know, which you can't. You're one person against a secret society, or you're one person against the military.
Now, this incident with the secret society happened before or after you came out as a hybrid publicly?
Before.
Okay. I guess the one other thing I wanted to ask you about, you do have implants, right?
I do, yes. Yeah.
And you think these are military as opposed to extraterrestrial?
I do, yes. Yeah, so I have one implant in my nose, which is a tracking device. So at any point, if they want to see where I am, then they can track me. I've also got another implant that the military have put in, which prevents me from fully changing shape. So I can't fully change into my reptilian form. I've got another implant, which is basically it monitors any sort of chemicals in my body, and it can also instigate them being unbalanced. So things like serotonin and melatonin levels, for example, they can control. Which, you know, anyone who's sort of into that side of things, if you know, if you can control the serotonin and melatonin levels in someone, that has quite an effect on them. So, yeah, so obviously their experimentation of me is something ongoing. Otherwise, they wouldn't sort of put those types of implants in. And obviously, to put a tracking implant in me, they obviously want to, you know, to keep record of me and know where I am, you know, any moment of the day.
Have you ever tried to get them removed?
I have, yes. I've got a friend who is very into energy work, and he's been working to see if sort of energetically he can interfere with the implants. Now, we did have a partial success in that, in which after an energy session, he did manage to turn those off. Unfortunately, about a week later, they were switched back on. So we're trying to work out at the moment how we can sort of permanently either remove them or switch them off. Another sort of unfortunate thing is with the implants, if you can accurately locate exactly where they are, even when you try to remove them from under the skin, they can either bury themselves deeper, or again, if you achieve in actually removing them, obviously, you know, they can be re-put in. So it's a bit of a difficult situation. Even if you achieve switching them off or removing them entirely, you know, within a week they could be back in again.
All right, Miguel, how many people did you interview in this book?
Eight.
Okay. And what else can people find in the book besides the interviews?
I think that is really, you know, for a lot of people, the core of it,
right,
because
right.
It's going to be new to them. It's a hell of a journey. I've gone through that book, because I had to do the transcription, most of the writing, the editing, proofreading, more editing, the formatting. So I have read that book cover to cover at least 20 times. And every single time I found new understandings, new moments of crystallization where I would suddenly get it, different things would hang together. And the first part of the book is just a sort of introduction. You know, we walk people through, sort of get people warmed up to the idea of hybrids by examining hybrids in human culture. What hybrids have we created? What hybrids have come to exist naturally within the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom? Then we look at hybrid discourse in ufology. How has the subject been handled up till now? And this principally has a comparison between we look at what different people have set forth and then compare and contrast them. And then we have the core of the book, part two, the interviews, and that's... It's getting on for 200 pages, getting into real depth and detail. But still, you know, every time I talk to any of them, I'm learning new things and thinking, oh, my God, we didn't even get to that in the book or that or that. And then part three is a thematic comparative analysis where we break down all of the questions and compare and contrast people's responses, looking at, because I was really keen to understand to what extent people's understandings and experiences and opinions intersect and overlap. I wanted to create a kind of Venn diagram to see if we could look at the core of this to understand what are the commonalities and what are the differences. I think the differences are principally which races people are composed of, but the commonalities is pretty much everything else. It's pretty much the abilities, missions, services that people provide. It's their understanding of what this is about. It's their spirituality. I guess another area where things are somewhat different are the methods, how they are, how they're created. A number of them, some people don't know. Some people understand that it was that ET genetic material was introduced post-conception. So while they're in the womb, that material was introduced. And then Robert Fullington has, I think, about four different possibilities. He doesn't know, but there's some very interesting possibilities that arose in his research into this and, you know, opinions that were offered to him by other hybrids, including, I mean, the wildest to me is that because he's related to the mantis beings and they're ancient beings who have been around for as long as any other, they've kind of conquered death. They're kind of, you know, he calls them masters of time and space. They don't have any kind of constraints, you know, that we could relate to. They don't even die in a way that we would understand. They can simply select a new form. So it may be that that is how he was created. And then because, I mean, there's a very strange twist to all this. He met through the Institute for Human Cosmic Interaction, a group dedicated to establishing, I suppose, friendly relations with ETs, we could put it that way. He met another of the hybrids in the book, Jacqueline Smith. And when they met each other for the first time, they never heard of one another, as far as I understand. And when they met, their jaws just fell open because they recognized each other from the ships. And then they had very interesting interactions for the period of time that they were at this meeting. And
I bet.
Spontaneously, at one point, did this mantis bow, where they have this particular bow that they do to one another, and they said it just happened spontaneously between them, and it just freaked them out to see the other person doing it, because they'd never seen another person in human form doing this. And Jacqueline described it as a soulful joy, because you just can't share this with regular people, if you like. And Robert related that story to another hybrid who's much further down the road in their understanding of things. And that person said, well, you know, it is possible that if you met Jacqueline on the ships, and given the age difference, it's possible that you have some of her genetic material and you're actually related to her because you both have mantis DNA. Etc. So, in terms of the methodology, how these beings are created, that differs, and the beings that they come from. But the rest of it, the kind of sense of mission, just the vibe of these people, it's just different. it just is different. There is a humility to them that is genuinely, genuinely otherworldly. It astonishes me over and over and over again that these guys never shift in terms of what they are. I don't know if I can explain that any better than that, but with humans, generally, there is a hell of a lot of complex game playing going on, and we all know this. Everybody does it. We are constantly having to adapt ourselves to our circumstances, to our company. Oh my goodness, I've just studied this all my life. I've just watched it in people. I've seen it in myself. I'm just fascinated by all of this, which kind of is part of, I guess, what fits with this whole wanderer thing that I'm uncovering. And I always had this idea buried in my mind that I wanted to write a book about an ET that had come here to study humanity. And I feel like I'm understanding better why that is, because I've always been doing that. And so I am a student of human behavior, and the hybrids just don't fit. There is something absolutely otherworldly about them in the nicest possible way.
All right. Well, the book is Meet the Hybrids, The Lives and Missions of ET Ambassadors on Earth. It came out in December, right?
It came out in mid-December, yeah.
That's 2015 for anyone listening to this way in the future. If people want to get a hold of you, or I don't know if Charmaine, if you talk to people publicly or not.
I do, yes. I've got a website, which I can give you the website address, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's the typical www.galactic-federation.co.uk. So people can visit the website, email me through that, and contact me for any services. And there's details of all courses and services on there.
Okay. And Miguel?
Well, we set up a website, which is meetthehybrids.wordpress.com. And on that, each of the hybrids has a page with some information about them, and there's a contact form, and we've set that up so that readers who want to connect with particular hybrids, ask them particular questions, connect with them for whatever reason, as long as it's respectful and positive, they can email them directly through the contact form.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I thank both of you for spending some time with us tonight. And what's up next for you?
Personally, I'm already about half a dozen interviews into the research for the new book, which is, I guess, of course, I don't want to give away too much at this stage, but let's say it's a natural outcropping of the hybrid research, and it's looking at the whole subject of ufology through that lens, I guess, asking, what we've learned in 70 years of ufology, picking, Roswell next year as a point in time, looking at what the implications are, where does the field go now, and how do we connect this better to the mainstream, given the implications discovered in that research.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Miguel. Thank you, Charmaine.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
All right. There you go. I'd love to hear what you people think on this subject. And at some point, I plan on putting a forum on the website. I haven't had time to do it yet. But there will be a forum eventually, and it'll stay up if people use it. So you'll be able to comment on different things, and maybe we'll take a note from Skeptico and queue up a question at the end of every interview. We'll see. Also upcoming, I'm working on collecting some artwork designs for some merchandise, some mugs, some t-shirts, maybe some hats, things like that. And of course, you can help us out by becoming a patron of the show. And you can find that at wheredidtheroadgo.com. It's only $3 a month. You get some extra stuff throughout the month. early interviews when they're available, extra snippets here and there. And of course, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. So until next week, here's Psyche Corporation with Strange Machine.
Strange machine called hope. Let me go.